Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th Age. I'm your host, JM, and with me as always are Nick and Becca and Mark.
Hey.
Hello.
Howdy.
We have a good show for you this week. This week we are doing a review of The Crown of Charon by Defy Danger. Now, the first thing we'll have to agree on, is it Charon or Charon?
I was reading it Charon.
I always thought it was Charon.
I don't really care.
That's right. Mark doesn't care on.
Nah. Care on.
Yeah. You stole it from me.
So, Nick, do we have any new patrons to thank this month?
No, but we do have quite a few ongoing patrons that we are very grateful to be backing the show. And if anyone else is interested in joining on, just go to patreon.com/iconicpodcast and you could back the show, get early access to the outlines that we're using, the recordings that we've got, and maybe even join in some online games that we're running.
That's true. Well, so just a disclaimer, we got a review copy of this from Defy Danger. So thanks to them for gifting us with a PDF copy of this and letting us talk about their game.
Woohoo.
Woohoo. What is The Crown of Charon? Well, it is a competitive 13th Age module. It's also available for 5e, but obviously we're a show about 13th Age, so we're going to be talking about the 13th Age version of it. And by competitive, I mean this is a throwback to like the A series and Tomb of Horrors and that sort of thing, where you are scored as a party going through it. It has a time limit. And in the olden golden days of yesteryear, you would have five or six people running the same module at a convention at like a Gen Con. And people would bring their D&D group together to competitively compete against other D&D groups. And you would get scored and you would get ranked and you would get a prize. And this is what this kind of throws back to.
Yep. See, what a bunch of nerds.
Yes.
Like us.
Right.
That's why they want you to get through it in a time limit. A lot of them are rated twos, depending on how many times you died.
Right.
So if you can get through with the least amount of deaths in the fastest amount of time, you can win.
Right. Now, I think we played through one, a different company did one during the fourth edition years, the Tomb of the Iron Lich. Again, same kind of thing. You've got a time limit. You have high-level characters, and the goal is to get through as efficiently as possible. If you've read Tomb of Horrors, this is sort of the same. I don't think it's as deadly as Tomb of Horrors. But
it's not as deadly, but if I remember right, that was more of a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your dungeons are easy.
Oh, are they?
Hold my beer.
That's right.
Right.
So,
have you guys ever run a game that's competitive?
I have not.
No.
Or played in it?
I did way back when, and it wasn't my cup of tea, so I've never done it again. I don't run those. As close as I've ever come is that old DCC zero-level funnel, but that's not a competitive thing. It's just you're a peasant or yearning to be something else. So
right. I've run, like I said, I run Tomb of the Iron Lich. And we've talked about getting a group of GMs to do something like this at our friendly local game store, myself and Cam, doing something like this at Petri's and saying, all right, here's the structure for making the characters and bring your team and we're all going to run the same module. Go. It's never come together. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's not.
And they usually had pre-gens because that's the only way to balance it is you have the pre-gens and backup characters, and as they die, you just hand them the next character, and it's the same pool of kind of characters. So people can't, you know, a la Magic, stack their deck for what they want.
Right,
and I think what you get.
I think for 4th edition, because it was so finely tuned and balanced that everybody's coming in kind of on the same playing field. So what level is this for?
Well, when I asked that, like, not only is it what level are your characters, but what level players? Like, would a new player be overwhelmed by this as well?
So to answer both of your questions, this module is designed for 6th level characters. Mm-hmm. And I would say that it's not designed for new players.
No, competitive modules usually are, well,
doesn't mean if you're running this at a convention, you won't get somebody who's never played 13th Age. If you do and you're listening, please explain that this is not a normal 13th Age game. This is a tournament.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're going to die many times.
Probably.
And I would say, too, not just whether or not this is experienced versus new, it also, I think, has to do with the type of player that's going to be coming to the table. Like, for example, if your gaming group is a bunch of casual gamers, they all just like coming together and laughing a lot, telling some fun stories, this probably isn't going to jive for them.
Right.
But if you've got very focused people who want to collectively work toward a common goal and knock out that time, rack up a bunch of points, then this might be a better module for them.
Right. If your group likes Darkest Dungeon, this is the game for them.
Yeah. I think that's just something to consider before you even really get into this adventure. Because if you're not that type of gaming group, you're not going to enjoy it.
Yeah, you get frustrated.
Exactly. So. Mm-hmm. But basically what the module is at this point, it comes with handouts, it comes with maps, and it's an 85-page adventure. You can get it in PDF, you can get it in hard copy. We'll tell you where at the end of the episode. Now, Nick, you were saying that you think it works better as a standalone module.
Right. And in the context of it being tournament based or, you know, for a convention, that's going to be standalone. As I was reading through it, I couldn't, without stretching too far, I couldn't think of a good way of bringing this full on into an existing campaign.
All right. And I feel like the hook, though, is a great hook for bringing in any campaign. So you're saying specifically the module unedited would not work well in your just to drop in a campaign.
Right. Yeah. And the hook is that you are, as a group, you are commissioned to go into the underworld and retrieve a magical item before the sun rises the next day and return to the surface with that.
Which is why you only have 8 literal hours, not 8 game hours to get through this module.
Right. So if your gaming group likes to banter and get distracted by small fiddly bits, then do not send them into the underworld for this particular magic item, because they probably will not make it in 8 hours.
Even if they're focused, there's a lot of puzzles and you have to, I mean, sometimes it's not obvious and getting through puzzles sometimes eats up a lot of time to get to the next room.
Mm-hmm.
I will say with the hook, I like the hook, but as a player, when I read through, I was like, yeah, I'm not trusting that priestess to bring me back after I give her the crown. I think I'm going to die anyway.
Right. Yeah, and I'd say too.
Yeah, it's just JM's influence.
That this module, to me, had more of like a computer game vibe to it than a tabletop game vibe to it.
Yeah, I saw that in the notes. So what do you mean by that?
So I was thinking back to the games I'd play in the 90s and the early 2000s, like Myst or World of Warcraft or those sorts of things, where there's a lot of puzzles that you have to figure out. And if you miss one little thing in the puzzle, your character's dead and you have to start over or go back to whatever that save point was. It also reminded me of like the World of Warcraft raids where you know what the overall story is and you still have to race through it as a party and recover whatever it is that needs to be recovered to the point where you may want to run through it multiple times. And I'd say that if I was thinking about running this this module multiple times for the same group of people, just to try to, you know, bring down that time, I would take the different pieces that have to be gathered for the big module puzzle and put them in different parts of the dungeon. That way it does change it up a little bit. That way they know that they don't have to go to this room and then this room and then this room, though having gone through it multiple times, you would pick up some of those elements.
Interesting, because I got a similar vibe, but not from the mechanics, because I enjoy puzzles in games, tabletop and otherwise, a lot like this. But it felt to me, I think Mark and I were talking about this, the initial hook is, hey, this priestess sends you into the underworld to get the crown back. And then I started reading it, and by the end of it, I really felt like one of the main influences to this adventure is the original Doom video game. This kind of techno demonic magic that is
cyber demons,
the succubus, which we will be talking about and I will throw at you at some point because that thing is amazing. But so Mark, you're feeling like this is not necessarily this doesn't feel like a 13th age adventure.
The cybernetics and all the science. And I guess to talk about some of it, we'll have to insert some spoilers. If you plan on playing this, listen to other episodes we have. Just some of the technology you have to collect and use doesn't fit any fantasy stuff. I mean, I like mixing it in like Shadowrun, but not in my 13th age game. And, you know, the whole failing forward and icon relationships, a lot of stuff is not Like in this, there is no, okay, we'll take a campaign loss. No, you have to get through this. It's a different flavor, which I will say they do a great job right up front. GMs need to read through this several times. This is right up front. This is what the type of adventure it is. It's not hidden at all. And you're like, wow, what is it? They tell you right up front. This is what we designed it for. If you're running it, read it. Become familiar with it. There's a lot of things going on.
Yeah,
it's just kind of not my cup of tea. But I didn't like the 80s tournaments like that either. Like get through this in right. 6 hours and score. It's like, I'm really not here for that. I'd rather role play and leave feeling really good.
Now, one of
even if we don't finish it, but you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things they did do a call out for is that, you know, this is the underworld, this temporary resting place for everyone that has died and is bringing stuff with them. And so if you're going to play mm-hmm. in the Dragon Empire, it would have existed throughout all of the past ages. Mm-hmm. And so then as everyone has died, they could have been bringing in bits and pieces of whatever the technology was of that age into this.
Right.
And then they would have been morphed together into whatever crazy monsters you players will go in.
Nick likes with. Numenera.
That's right.
I do like Numenera.
Well, I think the thing to remember is just because it's, and we, you know, I don't know about you, Mark, but I've run the A series, which is tournament, but I've never run it as a tournament.
Yeah. I've run the A series.
You don't have to consider, you don't have to do a time limit. You don't.
Yeah,
have
no, it
to
was just, through. I ran the whole GDQ, the A series. I ran a group long-term through that. And yeah, it wasn't, says a term, a lot of stuff you kind of ignored. And I like that idea, that hook of why you're going into the vault. Why is there a vault there? Oh, that's right. You have to pay the ferryman. Mm-hmm. So I like that concept a lot.
The initial setup is
yeah,
is
I like very that. Strong. I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about what we did like about the adventure. I felt like it had a fairly good, at least in the intro, it had a fairly good use of the icon involvement, even though they couldn't use the icons from the Dragon Empire. I felt like that was something that people who are writing 13th Age adventures need to ape a little bit more. They need to have, why are the icons involved with this?
Mm-hmm. One of the challenges I saw with the icon involvement in this particular module is there's not a lot of narrative story taking place other than when you step back far enough and you understand what all is going on. That's really it. Everything else is just a mechanical slog mm-hmm. and a lot of puzzles to figure out along the way. And icon relationships are really for that narrative story piece of it. And so if players don't have the time to elaborate on what's going on in the story, mm-hmm. there's not going to be very many opportunities for those relationships to really come into play.
See,
unless you were going to start leveraging more mechanical benefits like magic items or healing potions or whatever.
Or even in my mind, as I was reading through it, it's like, well, if this icon, we'll just use the three as an example, sent into this area, my default thought was, well, cool, there are agents of the three who are dead here. And if I need help with a puzzle or some sort of narrative jump forward, those would be where the icon relationships would come in strongest. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the GM could really use the fact that if this has spanned all of the ages and if everyone, no matter which icon you are tied to, comes here, it is a great melting pot for that type of icon involvement and not just, hey, I'm calling out to you and hoping for a favor. It's okay. Well, maybe if this icon is in its third regeneration, are the previous generations down here?
Mm-hmm.
And can I go and get something from them? And
well, and I think it also depends on if you're doing it as a one shot or you're putting it into a campaign. Because if you're dropping it into the campaign, then you're, the narrative impetus is going to continue to flow throughout this one adventure.
Yep.
I think the past icons are chained to a wagon.
Until they get tired of pulling.
That's right.
Then you get on.
That's right.
You ride for a while.
So I do think that the hook, I think we all agreed that the mm-hmm. hook is pretty mythic.
Yes, I like it.
Yeah. I mean, I love myths and this is so tied to the Greek ones.
Yeah.
With this mythic feel, tying it back to a hero quest with, you know, you have 13th Age, Glorantha. And yeah, there's a really cool mythic feel. It doesn't have to be Greek. It can change to fit wherever you have this set, whether it is the Dragon Empire or your own world.
So you're saying you want to face a half demon cyber brew? Because that's what you just threw in Jam's lap.
I mean, I'm fine with it.
But I think the concept of the Hero Quest, where you go in as players and it matters what happens in there, but you're still all going to come out alive, mm-hmm. Is very prevalent in this. And you're right. You don't have to use the Greek myths that are prevalent in this one. You could even pull from shards and do an Egyptian themed and start, pulling it from all sorts of different places.
Just a disclaimer, you don't always all come back alive from hero questing.
Yeah, I learned
this. That's the goal, though.
That's the goal. Generally speaking.
But hey, this would be a good hero quest. Go back and find something in the Land of the Dead. And
yeah. My main comment kind of going forward from this point is I would use this part, but would reskin it for more traditional fantasy. Mm-hmm. There are just a number of... Well, we're going to get into it.
Right.
It is a puzzle... heavy adventure, which is something that I actually really enjoyed. I know some of us did not, but there are so few games that come out now or modules that come out now that are puzzle focused as opposed to combat focused. When I was reading through the intro, I was like, wow, there's gonna be a lot of combats. There's actually not that many combats for an 85 page adventure. It is far more, hey, this thing happened in this other room and this thing seems to relate.
Yeah, I found that a very interesting mechanic in that here's this puzzle, figure this out, it goes click, and then nothing happens in this room. Yeah, it's a very interesting mechanic, and then you move on, and if you didn't get that click, 3 rooms later, you're going, what is wrong? Why can't we get past this? Oh, it's because you didn't do that puzzle correctly. And so then if you would have to backtrack and lose time doing so. Mm-hmm.
But there's still that GM, so in 13th Age, we're, as GMs, the way the game is written, it's, oh, Nick's trying to cast Fireball on this thing that's resistant to fire. You need to tell them before they use the power. There right. is this omniscient voice that kind of comes into play and say, all right, when your players do this, let them know that something has been unlocked in this room. Mm-hmm. And... yeah. So, Mark,
if they can survive the puzzle, there's several solve the puzzle while these flayed demon beings that are chained somewhere shoot fireballs at you. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you're not a big puzzle.
I'm not a big puzzle. Not holding against these guys. I'm not a big puzzle guy. Probably just because I don't figure them out well. That would be like, all right, icon relationship. Let me solve this puzzle because unless it's real simple, I just don't get them. Mm-hmm. Especially here when you got time. To go through it. So,
yeah, I think that would be the first thing that, like, I don't know that I would, if I ran this module even as is, it would not be timed.
Well, they do throw options in there with that clock.
Mm-hmm. There are ways to pause time, pause. And rewind time.
You can't act, but you can stop talking. The timer is not running. And there are some mechanics in there they throw in to help, but it's definitely, it's not just like solve the puzzle to open the door and you can sit there figuring out because it's timed for one, and two, the environment is a hazard in this too. So it's definitely punishing.
It does feel like you're in the underworld for basically the whole time. Like it feels I'm not like saying, a mythic environment.
The underworld should be deadly if you think about it. If you get sent there, now depending if you get sent there alive, that's probably more dangerous than if you're a spirit because then you kind of just blend in if you're a spirit like everyone else. That might be one thing I would change instead of sending there in spirit, because then you just, like you said, you blend in with all the other spirits wandering. If you're alive, you stand out and spirits will come up and go, hey, either, hey, what's up? Or I'm going to eat you because I hate the living.
One thing that was interesting about the puzzles as they were played out in this is, and especially compared to my experience with puzzles in tabletop games, is that the puzzles are spread out across multiple rooms. Mm-hmm. So you'll go into a particular room and you know that there's something here, but you can't actually do anything with it. And so you have to let that puzzle go and later on find whatever the extra key is and then return back and unlock it. Yeah, and that was interesting for me. And I think that in my experience, the puzzles have always been specific to a room. And for the most part, once you leave a room, there's no reason to ever come back to that room.
Right.
And this one, not only will you need to come back, but you've got to remember what room was where and how it was connected and work mm-hmm. your way back from there.
It felt like a really good escape room.
Yeah.
Dungeon. If that makes sense. If you're listening and you've done escape rooms, then you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So what are some of the things that you liked about The Crown of Carolyn?
Well, Mark kind of touched on this, but the environment itself is hazardous. I found it somewhat humorous when it was, if your players touch this, this happens. If they lick this, this happens. If they step near this, this happens. And it was interesting in that it brought the environment alive and potentially deadly instead of just a, well, it's a dungeon and you see rocks. There's more to it. And then eventually this muddy pool, if you touch it, you die. There's no saving throw. But once you do this, hey, look, it's totally fine. Everyone can touch it now. Yeah, like any player is going to go touch it now. But just the fact that there are so many details about the environment was pretty cool.
Yeah, and you touched on it earlier, Jane, when you said that it didn't matter whether you were in the first room or the last room, it felt like the underworld.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that. I mean, mm-hmm. it's not just that it was front heavy thematic and then it ended up just being a slog. It was no, from start to finish, every single room had that death feeling to it.
Mm-hmm.
I also really like the puzzles.
That's fine. They're not your jam.
And you'll see totally when you throw puzzles out there, I probably will.
You do. You
sit and let the rest of people solve it. Cause I just doesn't mean I can't get it. It's not
your cup of tea.
No,
that's totally fine.
And this is definitely an adventure that will test morals. There's certain mm-hmm. things you'll do. Casting another spoiler. Power drain when you're at the microphone will kill all the pilgrims, and you absorb their spirits, and it gives you powers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
Good cleric of whatever. You just what? Oh.
Oh yeah.
Right.
I don't know if you guys came across that part on the microphone.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa. I mean, you get great powers from it, but you've just consumed a bunch of spirits.
Yeah, that's probably not really
probably not that good
thing for you to do. Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't quite pick up on the moral dilemma there because I assumed that the players would trigger it without knowing what it was doing. Like they would just be like power drain and then
Tell them? Like, but, hey, you get 5 extra recoveries and you get this charge. By the way, you got that because you just ate 5 souls. What?
But yeah, and going back, Jane, what you said about one of the core things about 13th Age is kind of telegraphing to their players what's going on. I can't see how you would really be able to leverage that. And
you tell them ahead of time or tell them after. So there's a whole bunch of stuff. It's in the console area. There's a whole bunch of things to do.
Now, you like the maps.
Very good maps. It's a very good layout. It's not confusing as far as where things are or how they progress, which I like. There's some adventures that we've seen that the concept's great, but slogging through it as a GM, you're like, where do I find it? This one's laid out nicely, which is kudos, because sometimes you're like, okay, they just forgot this?
Especially for an adventure that is so location puzzle dependent, it was not difficult for, I think, any of us to track where everything was at.
Yeah, no, I got that. Yes. Yeah. So that's good. Good layout, which some people have great ideas, just have no idea how to get that across to the GM.
Yeah.
And a note on the maps, there was some art kind of spattered throughout it, but most of the art, I think, would be with the maps themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. and the handouts. But you're right. When we say it's an 85-page adventure, that's really 99% words on the page.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is fine because it kind of goes with the price. We'll cover at the end, you know, what you're getting.
Yeah. Now, what about you, Becca? What did you like about this one?
Overall, what I like about it, I liked the environment. I liked the puzzles. I liked the feel of it. And I liked the idea of using something like this in a campaign or an adventure mm-hmm. with retooling and reworking to make it fit wherever and whatever I'm doing. If it is a Greek style game, great. that's then what I'm going to use. If it's more of a Dragon Empire, then less Charon and more, well, here's a reincarnation of the Prince of Shadows from the Fourth Age, and good luck with that one. Right. Like, so I feel like this happens with a lot of things. In general, I take the modules and I pull what I want. I very rarely go all the way through from beginning to end.
So my two favorite parts of this, well, one is there's a bone pile puzzle where you can basically make your, spoiler alert, you can make your own servants for the rest of the adventure. And what I like is they do give you times where they're like, be explicit with your players that they can do this in this room because they may not pick up on it. Great 13th age advice, and just great advice for 13th age GMs outside of this adventure. There are times where, remember, the goal is not to stump the players. The goal is to give them the tools they need to engage with what's going on there. So I liked that advice. Now, you guys didn't play during third edition, but I know Mark and I played during third edition, and there was the reign of monster templates where you could just keep throwing adjectives on a monster to make it bigger and bigger.
Yeah, see, I always maybe took two things and put it together.
See, this has...
This one goes way overboard.
No, I think...
The mummified despoiler mage flayed blasphemers.
You're missing the half aboleth. Succubus Mummy Queen.
How about the Frost Bog of the Half Garisto Frog Hemoth?
Yes.
Hey, one, you can use a Frog Hemoth now.
That's minus 6 points for using a Frog Hemoth. hate that creature.
You can use that mini now.
But this thing has, like, this is where Doom really just kind of settled in my brain.
You have to fight it because that's how you get the Hellfire multi-rocket launcher. You have to kill it to get it.
Mm-hmm. So the Succubus Queen has those two rotting double pain saws, which is just something I'm going to pull into something else because on a natural even hit, the target is grabbed and takes ongoing damage. And I just see Ash versus the Evil Dead where he sticks the chainsaw in something and just the creature can't get off the end of the chainsaw.
If I use it first, are you still going to use it?
Oh, heck yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No worries. So.
That a warning?
So, Nick, what about you? There was one puzzle that really stood out to you.
So this was actually kind of before you actually went all the way into the temple. And it was just, from the perspective of a player, I would almost just kind of brush past it and think, oh, okay, well, maybe I'll come back to it. But it actually was a pretty crucial part of the entire campaign. And if you didn't take care of this at the very beginning, then it would limit you later on. And just that type of aspect to the puzzles where it's not just two or three rooms next to each other, but it's from the very beginning to the very end, these puzzles are all related back and forth to each other. And that would be one where, as a player, just kind of easing into this, not really paying a whole lot of attention, figuring that once we actually get into the temple, then things are going to start being important. But no, it's actually important even at the very beginning.
I mean, that kind of brings us into the things that kind of stood out to us as things that we would change. Mark and I are kind of in agreement. When we run high fantasy, we want it to be High fantasy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would spend a little bit of time for my 13th age game reskinning a lot of the more techno demonic into just straight demonic. I don't mind demons in my games, but gosh darn it, no technology in my fantasy.
That's right.
Could you do like clockwork demons maybe?
I mean, I could do clockwork. Yeah. I think it's like Mark brought up the Hellfire rocket launcher. I was just like, for me personally, not my cup of tea, but Shadow of the Demon Lord exists. And so there are people who like metal in their fantasy. And
so instead of a Hellfire rocket launcher, it'd be more of a Hellfire wand that casts magic missile type
or staff or fantasy trope that does the same effect.
Yeah.
And if it's limited, you could do it as a scroll, right?
Right.
Or you just give it as a wand with 5 charges.
Right.
5 uses and then it's done. If you don't use it the right way, sorry.
Yeah.
You lose the tournament.
As Mark pointed out, if you don't like puzzles, this is and your group doesn't like puzzles, this is not the adventure for you. No matter how much reskinning you do.
it's not like I detest all puzzles.
Right.
But if every room has a puzzle, or at least a piece that you have to do because three rooms down, you'll need that. That kind of wears on me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you're trying to keep track mentally of, let's say, 30 to 40 different puzzles all at the same time, it is a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you definitely need a note taker. And it, that might be a caveat to tell them is don't be afraid to interact with everything in the room. It might unlock something later. Now, some of them, because they're environmental, might damage you.
Or kill you.
But at least then they know, well, we shouldn't just skip over.
Mm-hmm.
This because there's some bones scattered in the room. It's not just flavor. You might need the thigh bone of that behemoth mm-hmm. later.
Mm-hmm. I have to say with those puzzles, there were a few of them that I kind of rolled my eyes at. Invisible keyholes with invisible keys with give them some hint that there is something there, right. Whether it is the key that you find and where it goes is invisible, or the keyhole is visible and the keys are invisible. Like there's some points that it was like, okay, time out. Like,
no, there is something that if you get, then all that's invisible is suddenly visible again.
Right.
Yeah, but if you don't get that,
right.
But see, that's also the catch-ya. And I don't get into those of, if you don't find this one MacGuffin in room 2, by the time you get to room 30, yeah, sorry, you're never going to get through. It's like, really, that's the only thing that can open this or do whatever you need. Mm-hmm. I don't quite get into those either. There should be options. Maybe it's tougher because you don't open the puzzle or find that thing to help you, but it shouldn't come to a screeching halt because it's invisible and the key's invisible.
And there's plenty of times in those puzzles where they say, here are your three options for being able to solve this or figure it out. But there are unfortunately those times where it's you either get this or you don't. And if you don't, well, tough luck.
If you get 6 marks at your table, it's going to be a long day.
It is a tougher module, right? But I think that's more due to its competitive nature or one-shot tournament nature than it is. I don't think any of us really dug into mechanics on the individual monsters to see where they bounce back on.
No, but even in the player's guide, which is another handout that you give that comes with this, it very explicitly says prepare to die.
Mm-hmm.
You will not get all the way through this surviving. You know,
right.
So I think that's one of those things that's 13th age is very much you will survive. But this particular module is you will die and be prepared for that by bringing extra character sheets.
Right.
And kind of on that, some of the other things that kind of struck me as not maybe not quite 13th age or the module didn't really provide the guidance to help with that is the whole concept of failing forward. There's a lot of puzzles or checks in here where if you succeed, then good things happen. But if you don't succeed, well, that was your one chance. That's not really failing forward, or even if you do fail your check, you're still able to progress and you're still able to solve the puzzle or whatever. You know, there wasn't a lot of guidance in how to do that. And so that would be something that if I was going to be running it, I would be thinking through each one of the puzzles, each one of these checks. How am I going to handle this? Because I want the whole party to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want them to spend 8 hours of gameplay and not actually get the crown that they are in there to get. As a GM, I want them to be able to do that. And that's part of the impetus behind some of the 13th age mechanics as well. Mm-hmm. And then even though there's not a lot of encounters per se, there's not really any guidance on, well, if they flee this encounter.
Right.
There's a sense that not all of the monsters have to be slain, but if you're not slaying all the monsters, then are you really fleeing? And then do you need to take a loss of some sort by just running away from them? Again, that's not something that was really spelled out.
Yeah, I think that's, I don't know if that's what you were getting at, Mark, but that's the thing that doesn't feel 13th agey to me.
Yeah, there's several things.
Yeah. I don't know if you would have to really isolate it in the campaign and say, all right, listen, this is... You are going into the underworld. You have 8 hours to do this. There is no way to flee. There is, you know, and just say, hey, for this next session or three or however long you're in here, that mechanic is off the table. Plot immunity has been revoked.
Right.
Yeah. Well, again, because you die as soon as the combat's over, or if they die out of combat before you go in, here's your new character. It's just a new soul gets shoved in there. It's not... There is no fleeing. So I think they just ignored it because that's not part of this adventure.
Right. Now, I think it'd be easier to do especially if you're running it in a campaign, because right, you don't, if you're taking this into a campaign, the endless grind of souls is less satisfying. Mm-hmm. So I think there could be a way to work through it that the same character comes back, but there is a penalty that starts.
Well, in that, just
moving towards,
just thinking about that, if your character dies, it's not so much that they die, but they wake up back alive on the living earth and the priestess has to send you back again. Well, if that's going to happen, you take a hit for it. And so you show up in the next room and something is wrong, whether that's magic weapons or whatever. But like, I think you could work it so that if death or fleeing happens, you could still work it into a campaign if right. that's what you wanted to do.
Right. And I mean, there's cursed items in 13th Age. There's curses that you could use as a basic reference for Maris died. All right. So she has a -2 until the escalation die reaches 2 at this next point because...
Or there's a taboo now that Maris can't use her left arm or
right.
whatever.
She had to go there.
That's right. She doesn't have a left arm, so it's fine.
Not anymore. So what did you guys think about some of the powers of the Maelstrom, the Ascended, Bodax, Skilius, Cyber Demon, Necromance? He's got a couple of attacks, and some of the special triggers or special effects from this go beyond just damaging the character. So for example, it says if hits, you take 30 damage, and if the target drops to 0 or below after taking this damage, they and every other member of their race in the mortal realm disintegrates. Players cannot use that race to create characters in subsequent games in the current campaign, and if 3 or more races are rendered extinct in this way, the 13th age comes to an end and a new barren age begins. I mean, that, I know there's thematically, this is one of the gods of the underworld and they have that power, but it almost seemed like really heavy handed. I don't know if I would actually run it that way, especially if I'm bringing it into a campaign, because that seems very brutal.
It does. Having run games for you and knowing the amount of genocide you have personally committed in games, I don't have a problem with it. But it's also that I would telegraph that. It's the incentive to keep was when we were playtesting that monster, right? The fact that the cleric had to stay on top of healing because if anyone dropped below 100, they could be targeted and
it'd be instant death.
Instant death.
And yeah.
And it's like, ooh, if you know that 30 damage is what the thing does and it is the Vorpal Kopesh of extinction. Thank you for that. Yeah, I mean, it adds a tension to the game.
Yeah, and I think you're right. If you were to telegraph and maybe make these special triggers available to the players so that they know the mechanics of what's going on, that would allow them to choose. You know, going back to Mark, your example about the moral conundrum earlier about, are you going to trigger this and take the power for yourself? Without really knowing, this kind of comes down to, well, if the dice happens to hit an 18 or 19 and you happen to be a little bit lower, then it just happens. There's not really a choice there. But you do bring in an interesting point about putting that pressure on a cleric.
Right.
And making sure that there is a cleric or some sort of healer inside the party and everyone's staying on top of that.
Right. I had less problem with the Kopesh, the Vorpal Kopesh of Extinction, than I did with the repeating soul burst rocket launcher arm.
That's only one of the weapons she's got. Remember, she's got 4 arms. She's got the Demon Fist Rod of Obliteration and the Scepter of the Wraith Queen.
Also, just kudos to the authors, because these magic items or these power, like these monster attacks, are fantastically named. The Demon Fist Rod of Obliteration.
Repeating rocket launcher that fires warheads exploding with the trapped souls of mortals that have perished in the pyramid. So she's blowing you up.
They definitely, they have their theme locked down tight.
They do. They do.
Even if it's not the theme for you, reading this adventure really shows you how to stick to a theme well. Like,
very true.
And she should be tough.
It's the boss.
Charon's sister.
I also like the Demon Fist Rod of Obliteration. 30 fire damage, and if they drop to 0, choose one icon with which the target has a positive relationship. The target and every follower of that icon in the mortal realm bursts into core. Maybe it's as simple as adding a save. letting the players know, and then making it, even if it's a hard save, then at least they have a chance.
Yeah. But I think that's more flavor, just because this is supposed to be a time tournament thing, not... And it's, they didn't really design it to go into your campaign.
Right.
If it was in your campaign, that would be like, oh my God.
Yeah. Right.
Since this is, you're just telling them when she hits that, not only she did that, all the people in here are like, oh my, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is more just a one shot.
Then. One shot, and yeah. I'm sure it'll get quite a few chuckles at the table.
It wouldn't be nearly as weighty of a consequence as if it really was.
Yes, because you're not playing
the last
in the campaign.
Year and a half playing through this, building up this world. You've gone through the Book of Ages, and you created this whole thing, and then all of a sudden, an entire race is gone. I mean, I know JM. Consequences. Yeah,
things JM does not have an issue with.
So I guess one last thing that I like and I dislike is the fact that this is a timed module. I liked the fact that it's adding another layer of tension to what's mm-hmm. going on. I dislike the fact that it's 8 hours of real time compared to 8 hours of what's in-game time. Like, for example, if you're in room... say 31, and you finally got the key to go back to room 6, game time, you say, I run back to room 6 and I put in the puzzle key. But in game time, I mean, that may take it, that alone may take, you know, a half hour to an hour or more.
Well, I mean, even just saying, hey, we went back to room 6, running it, I would be more lenient on that side. It's 8 real world hours, because it puts the pressure on all of those things that players fiddle around at the table with that doesn't take up any in-game time, right, but sucks up the time in your session. And as soon as you put that time limit on there, I'm still going to say, yeah, you can run all the way back to room 6. That didn't take you any time. But that 5-minute discussion on who gets the magic item that turned into an argument, cool. Whole group's now down.
Or even the distraction of, did you guys go see that movie last week?
Yeah.
You know,
click.
That never happens.
What are you talking about? So, Crown of Charon, also the Crown of Charon, both of them are available at DriveThruRPG for $6.66. Well priced. You can actually order a print version of this for $22.50. None of us have the print version of this, but I'm assuming it's going to be of similar quality to some of the other books that I've purchased off of DriveThruRPG for $6 and some change. What do you think? Is it worth getting? And if so, why? What would you use?
I would say yes. It's worth picking up. I mean, if nothing else, you're spending $6.66 on inspiration, ideas for how to work puzzles into your own campaign, the whole initial hook about what's going on, how to get your players into the underworld. There's a lot that you can pull from this. And I think for $6, yeah, it's definitely worth it. I also think that for something very different, it's worth it as well. And I think maybe that was part of why I liked it, is I don't have the experience of the tournament games in past iterations of D&D. And so this was a very new thing for me as something just to, you know, over a holiday or something like that, where we can't really play through our campaign, say, all right, guys, we're going to change things up and we're going to get serious for the next 2 or 3 sessions. And we're going to crunch through this and see what our score is. Next year, we're going to do the same thing. Next, you know, and maybe make a ritual or a tradition out of it and see if you can keep beating your score.
Hmm. Interesting.
Which the scores do get submitted to.
Yeah, they want you to submit your scores for this.
Yeah. So, and then you can see how you rank based on everyone else in the world.
Which is really kind of cool.
Yeah.
Well, you brought up an interesting point that I hadn't thought about. You could always use one puzzle that's spread across the dungeon and pull it into one room or 2 rooms of whatever dungeon you're going into. Mark, we'll go to you next, sir.
It's not my cup of tea, but like Nick said, for $6, I'd be willing to get this just for the inspiration and rework it to more my flavor.
Yeah, I mean, I've spent money on plenty of books purely for inspiration. So for this price, getting inspiration, getting magic items, getting monsters that you're going to adjust a little, maybe. I mean, that's a lot that you don't really have to do that much work for.
And I think it's worth it for the succubus. So
succubus. If you're a new GM and going to run a game for a bunch of experienced GMs, run them through this.
Oh, that's brilliant, Mark.
And then tell us how it went.
Yes, if you have run it or you plan to run it, please let us know. We would love to hear how it went. I'm sure the guys over at Defy Danger would love to hear how it went. And if you're, even if you run it in fifth edition, I would be very interested to hear how it goes for you as well.
Yes.
Every room is unfavorable.
That's right. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/iconicpodcast or by using our Amazon referral link, which you can find in our show notes or on our website to do your online shopping. Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And be sure to check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.